In the movie The Hunger Games, contestants are thrown into a game of survival. They are given time to complete a task, and they're not given a time to complete a task, but instead they are told to kill or be killed. Very similar to a game that a lot of middle school kids, not to mention any names, Josiah, but they play right now called Fortnite. To win the game, you are the last one to survive. Now, today, we continue our series called The Hunger Games, as we discuss the idea that God has put us on this planet and just kind of basically said, figure it out. I've given you this spiritual hunger, so go ahead. Find that food to satisfy you. Now, our spiritual hunger has something to do with relationships and joy and meaning and truth and identity, all those things that come from God. And we're comparing and contrasting with the book of Ecclesiastes, with the book of Philippians, as Jody said. And it talks about in the book of Ecclesiastes that what life is like under the sun. And when they use that expression, under the sun, it means life without God, but just doing it man's way. And the book of Philippians tells us what life is like with joy, life with God. This is a process also called sanctification. We move from meaningless life to a joyful one. Oh, I wish the process were a lot easier than it is. But there are hiccups, there are challenges, there are things along the way. Last week I talked about our desire for wisdom. Acquiring wisdom should be a good thing, but if it's not done right, it kind of leads us to actually more sorrow and grief in our life because, oh, we get all this knowledge. That should be helping that hunger, but it's not. And so that wisdom that you're acquiring is not making it worse. And as human beings, we have limited time to figure all this out. We have limited brain power. And we're somewhat selfish. And so it's really hard for us human beings to get that godly wisdom in our lives. We have a lot of challenges to overcome. And we talked about how in Philippians last week, how we must be committed to God being our teacher. And that God is teaching us, and he's committed to teaching us and helping us complete this task until the day he returns or the day we meet him in his kingdom. And I think that's something that we all know, but we don't always live like we know it. We don't always get up every day and thinking, man, I've got to soak up God's wisdom today. I've got to see where he's teaching me. Because if not, I'm going to drift towards meaningless life. I'm going to drift towards earthly wisdom. And that's one of the reasons why I challenge some of us to do the discipline of journaling. It's certainly just one way you could connect with God. But this month, we're focusing on that as a spiritual discipline, to connect with God, to slow yourself down long enough to listen, to understand that God is always teaching us, always trying to give us wisdom, and yet we're not always tuned to that wisdom. But that's what satisfies our hunger. Are we committed to getting filled? Now, today let's discuss another of life's great pursuits, the concept of work and pleasure. Just like wisdom, we all know that work and pleasure are not really bad things in and of themselves. They're all part of life. God created them. But Solomon is quick to warn us that we can quickly fall into working and playing under the sun rather than life with the joy of God. Now, I'm going to the next slide there. I feel sorry for this guy. Because, you know, when I Google pictures, you know, I have to check the ones that are just, you know, free for, you know, copyright. I can just put up. So probably his wife or some grandkid took that picture of their grandfather and posted it on the internet. And now pastors all across the country are using this guy snoring as a sermon illustration. But it's okay. Because he tells us that what does work do for us? Solomon tells us, this older man tells us, it makes us tired. We work hard and we come home weary. And the harder we work, the wearier we get. Ecclesiastes 1:8 says, all things are wearisome. We know that, don't we? We know that. We feel that in our bones. Sometimes we just get home at night and think, I don't want to do nothing. Yesterday was one of those days I didn't want to do nothing. I hardly did anything either. My wife would verify that to you, that I hardly did anything yesterday. Number two, our work doesn't guarantee the desired results. Other people take the credit for the work that you do. They maybe take your ideas. It's too easy to get robbed in this life. There's a great deal of chance involved. The stock market, you're going to rely on that? Social Security? You could get hurt tomorrow at your job and you don't know what that will bring. There are just too many risk factors in our life. I mean, this guy apparently stole somebody else's car and he's bragging about it. You just never know. There's no promises you're going to get what you deserve in this life. Ecclesiastes 2:18 says, I must leave them to the one who comes after me. Meaning, whatever you got in life, it's going to be on a garage sale one of these days, right? It's not just thrown out completely. We can't count on life to give back to us what we put into it. There's too much evil. There's too much chance. Number three, we have a competitive urge to outshine or not to be outshined by others. Now, I don't know that all competition is bad. I actually think that can be a good thing and spiritual gift in some people's case. But Ecclesiastes 4:4 says, and I saw that all labor and all achievement spring from man's envy of his neighbor. Isn't that sad? I know work was not originally meant to be an evil thing, but again, we drift towards these things naturally. And finally, number four, the prosperity that one gets from work brings no real satisfaction. Ecclesiastes 6:7 says, all man's efforts are for his mouth, yet his appetite is never satisfied. So we think, oh, wow, that was nice to have a good meal out, but I got hungry the next day, so I worked harder and longer to have another good meal, and yet that just produced more hunger, and so I worked. You know, you kind of get caught up into that. It never really satisfies. So maybe we should just pursue pleasure instead of work. Does that give us any better results in our life? A lot of people do. They just bear through work. You know, it's just like, oh, work is agony, but hey, the weekend, woohoo, let's go. Let's go have fun. But Solomon says pleasure doesn't provide any better answer. For one, he says, whoever loves money never has enough. People who don't work are actually worse off than those who do. A fool folds his hands and ruins himself. I mean, how many days could I sit home doing nothing before life would really fall apart? Again, they provide some pleasure, temporary relief. And again, pleasure not always bad. God wants us to have some of that. But they do nothing to satisfy that hunger in our hearts and our souls that God has given us. Okay? They're good things if done the right way. So what does Paul offer us in Philippians? Sometimes I wish the Bible would just spell it out for me in ways that it doesn't always do. I wish it would just list it. Paul would just say, okay, do these things and not do these things. And there are some books of the Bible that do a little bit more of that. I mean, Ten Commandments and things like that. I really hope Paul, if he didn't do that, would tell us, okay, tell me how many hours of work and how many hours of pleasure and how many hours of rest. You know, if you just tell me specifically, but he doesn't do that either. Instead, Paul gives us actually a better tool. He tells us how we should do that. But it's not just about doing work and doing and having pleasure. It's how to go about having the work that's meaningful and fruitful. He tells us how to do them. There are a number of things that fall into the categories of right and wrong, but a lot more things fall into the category of well, they're good if you do them right, and they're bad if you do them wrong. So he wants to tell us how to live. Philippians 2:4 says this, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interest of others. See, whether you are working or playing, you must strive against being only about yourself. It doesn't say completely forget about your own interests. It doesn't go that far. But it is just saying when you look at your own interests totally about yourself, which is our natural tendency to do, it will just produce more and more desire to be selfish. It reproduces the angst, that hunger for more that can never be filled when you're selfish. And then Philippians 4, 5, and 6 says this. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. So I took these two verses and I came up with seven words. Seven words that if we put them in our lives, we would be able to work. We would be able to rest. We would be able to play in a way that fulfills a good deal of that spiritual hunger in our lives. Most of us struggle doing these seven things. Jody talked about one of them today. So let me give you seven words. Unselfish. Giving. Humble. Gentle. Non-anxious. That was a tough one for me. Prayerful. And thankful. Let's not ask how much God should we work, how much we should play. We're all different. We all have been made a little differently. Let us ask instead, how much, Lord, can I work and still be giving, humble, gentle, non-anxious, prayerful, and thankful to my family? How much can I be lazy and enjoy life and life's pleasure and still be unselfish, giving, humble, gentle, non-anxious, prayerful, and thankful? God has given you talents. He's asked you to go to work. My family needs me to work. I need to work. As much as a day like yesterday will happen in my life, this is not what's good for me as a regular diet of my life. I need to work. But I also need to work the right way. It's not about just being home, bringing home the paycheck. It can't be just about that because that will never satisfy the desire in my life. But if I do my job, if I go to work, and I'm looking for ways to be giving, and I'm humble, and I'm gentle, and I'm non-anxious, and I'm prayerful, and thankful, wow, it changes my whole day. You know, some of this is just like, it's just too easy to have the head knowledge. I mean, most of us kind of know this. We may have put different words in the answer category, but most of us know this. The problem is we don't do it. Or we think, oh, I never can change. I never can live any different. So I'm never going to change, and I'll just won't try. And when you give up the process and you stop moving forward with God and God's wisdom in your life and God fulfilling that whole, you're just going to become more like Ecclesiastes. Life is going to seem more meaningless. It's going to seem more purposeless. And you're going to try to fulfill that whole in other ways that will not be helpful. Even if you just took one word of those seven words and you said, this week, the kids, today, we need our pins. We need the pins just like the kids. Don't grumble this week. Be thankful. Sow it into your daily life. You know, too much of our lives are based on what we can do rather than what we should do. We look for the, okay, Lord, what is the extreme way I can live out my life that's just barely following you? You know, can I still have I want to do all the things I want to do, but still be counted like as good What a terrible way to think. Rather than think, God, I want so much of you. I want everything you've got. I want you to teach me as close to perfect as I can get, knowing that I am still very human, because I know that is what's going to fill my soul. God is not only our great teacher, he is our shepherd. He guides us in what we do. He's our mentor. He's our rabbi. He walks with us and gives us the words and the thoughts that specifically are meant for us. But most of us, I'm afraid, and I do not have this down, we don't slow down long enough to even, we take life as a 2-minute devotional, which is sometimes necessary, I understand. We throw up a quick prayer, and I know God understands certain circumstances, but hardly a regular diet of living close to God. Hardly a regular diet to make a difference in your life. If that's all your spiritual life is made up of, is a 2-minute devotional, you won't be changed. You will just struggle every day. I don't want to make it sound like when you follow Christ, life isn't hard, because it is. And tragedy will still happen. Terrible things will still happen. But you've got a choice. Are you going to live under the sun, as Solomon talks about? Or are you going to live like Paul in Philippians? My life is a journey. Is trying to get from here to there. Some days I try harder than others. Some days I'm a little bit more here than there, but oh Lord, help me live a life that is unselfish, giving, humble, gentle, non-anxious, prayerful, and thankful. If people are ever going to be attracted to us, it's not just about what we do. It's about how we do it. I encourage you, do some reflecting, do some journaling. Look at yourself. I've been journaling a little bit in something I've never done in my life. I've been journaling about how I grew up. And some of the faulty ways I've been taught, some of the faulty ways I've adopted faulty thinking. And I've been trying to learn about myself so that God could open a door to change me. And I'll keep you updated on the journey. Come with me. Come with me and start your own journey. We can talk about what God's teaching us. This time I want to ask the worship team to come forward. I encourage you to do some reflecting, some journaling. There are notes in your bulletin, back of the bulletin, middle of the bulletin, journaling about some ideas that might get you started. But I encourage you, take those steps. Write down the words on a card, 7 words, or even 1 word on a card. Stick it in front of you at work, on your desk, in your car, and say, this week I'm going to do this one thing.